Well, my good friend, Dr. Norman Safra, is with us live via telephone. He is known as one of the most amazing ophthalmologic care, I hope I pronounced that correct, care doctors in our community and frankly in any community. And he's written a book entitled The Eyes of Isaac, Ophthalmic Care. There we go. Ophthalmic Care Through the Prism of Judaism. Dr. Norman Safra, a pleasure to welcome you to JM in the AM.
Good morning to all the listeners from JM in the AM, and a special good morning and ketivav chatima to you and all your listeners.
Appreciate that very much. Dr. Safra is among the nation's leading ophthalmic laser and microsurgeons. He's known for his expertise in treating diseases that cause visual loss. For over 30 years, the Eye Institute at Maimonides has been under his leadership and has been at the forefront of research into diseases that cause permanent vision loss. It's his unique perspective and experience in taking care of Jewish patients who have been severely impacted by loss of vision that has led to the creation of this book. Again, the book is entitled The Eyes of Isaac, and Dr. Norman Safra is with us live via telephone. You know, I always think that this time of year we have an even greater appreciation for the one above. And frankly, Dr. Safra, if one would analyze part by part the human body, they'd have to be, you know, enthralled by all the different things that God has created. I mean, the way the arm works and the way the fingers work and the way the ear works, etc., etc. There is something to the average person, if we consider me an average person, about the eye that seems so complicated, so intense, and so intricate that I believe when one analyzes the machine, the mechanism that the eye is, one has an even greater appreciation for the one above. As someone who looks into eyes all day long, what's your reaction to that observation?
You know, you said it very well, Malcolm. You know, we sort of imply this when we say Asher Yatsar every morning when you come out of the restroom. And, you know, the visual alliterations that are present within all of Tanakh, you know, Vayar, Hashem Kito, right? The visual alliterations are so embedded within our literature and our being. You know, another name for Navi is called a Ro'eh. We have all of this that is sort of really embedded, and our visual system is so much a part of our Jewish practice. We are people of the book, and if you can't see the book, God forbid, it creates tremendous, tremendous angst in our abilities to sort of execute the will of the Creator above.
And it's interesting because, I mean, some of what I'm saying, obviously, I saw in terms of what you and your colleagues have written in the book, but it's interesting because it does seem, and again, it's unfair to compare, and we shouldn't go down the road, but I think it's almost impossible not to. When one looks at deficiencies in hearing, deficiencies in the ability to taste, the deficiency in the ability to feel something, it feels like there are compensations, there are adjustments, there are ways to handle that so it does not affect one's observance to a great degree. They can compensate for it. As you just said, if you can't see, you can't see. And if you're a Baal Kore, and I'm giving one out of a million examples, if you're somebody who's relied on to read the Torah, as we know halachically, if you can't see those letters, you're not allowed to go up and read. So I think when it comes to the eye, there's even more of a stark demarcation of what one can or can't continue to do as an observant Jew.
It's so well said. You know, technology in medicine is, you know, evolving at an exponential rate. We have, you know, cochlear implants for those who can't hear.
Right.
We have prosthetic arms, lo aleinu, for people who lose limbs.
Right.
But our ability for artificial vision is not quite there yet. So that as a practicing Jew, any abnormality or deficiency in your visual system really impacts not just you and your abilities to function as an observant Jew, but it impacts the community and your family at large.
No question about it. And by the way, we should mention that as far as we know, and you pointed out, the only deficiency that has a terrible negative connotation, and by negative, I don't mean negative about the person, just negative in terms of the experience, is eyesight. It's the only place where the Talmud uses very strong language in terms of the experience of a blind person.
Right. And it's very much true. And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, I've been at Maimonides now going on 31 years. Wow. And it's that being in practicing in within the largest group of Jews outside the country of Israel that has given me a unique perspective. You know, people, the first thing we all do, right, is you have a new ache or pain, you know, you go to Dr. Google to look things up, right? Yeah. We're all the same. What does Dr. Google say?
They want quick answer.
And there's support systems for a variety of conditions. You know, there are charities for all sorts of maladies. When it comes to supporting individuals with visual loss, it's much sparse, much more sparse. Mm-hmm. Think about all the gemachs that we have. Our community is truly amazing. You know, Ein Kamocha Yisrael, right. That a gemach for everything. But for people and support of families suffering from vision loss, we are certainly lacking the support systems that exist for other conditions.
By the way, we should point out then that those who do provide, you know, large print sidurim and benchers and machzorim, they don't even realize the role they're playing. There's so little in terms of resources out there that those things can really be vital for families.
Absolutely, and I want to acknowledge Jewish Heritage for the Blind, Rabbi Toiv in Brooklyn, who still has supplies of large print machzorim, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Yes, they are heavy. Yes, they are multiple volumes because...
But they're very helpful.
they are crucial, and they have a whole array of things. But, you know, for a religious Jewish patient, many of the newer adaptive devices are not available for Shabbos and Yom Kippur, right? Because
give me one example that an average guy like me would understand. Give me something that the general community could use that we wouldn't be able to use on Shabbos.
Your iPhone or your Google phone, your Android phone, where you can use the camera to enlarge things.
Right.
Can't use it in Shabbos and Yom Kippur. Right. We have all these other handheld devices that are technology-based and video camera-based, which for the practicing Jew on Shabbat and Yom Tov are just not permitted.
Right.
And we're relying on, and we're still waiting, you know, there's this great organization in Israel called SOMEX,
right,
that I know you're familiar with, Nachum, that it works on all these technologies. But in the field of visual adaptive devices, they just lag behind. The needs are so great. You know, their design of that first motorized wheelchair was to address a need, right? You know, that's how typically they approach things. There's the need, and then they sort of work to solve it.
There are, Dr. Norman Saffer's with us, by the way. The book is called The Eyes of Isaac. We should mention a couple of things in terms of our history before we talk more about what's happening today. There are figures in Tanakh, there are figures in the Talmud who are known for for visual deficiencies, let's put it that way, right? And some great people in our history had to deal with it, correct?
Absolutely. Well, in fact, the title of the book, right, was apropos The Eyes of Isaac. You know, it's just interesting, right? The first biblical reference to a person visually impaired as Lemach, but that's in Rashi, not in the text. But if we take a look, and this is why I chose the title, Einei Yitzchak, The Eyes of Isaac, why would I pick this as the title of this book about ophthalmic care through the prism of Judaism? Because he is our sort of prototype, the archetype for this person with vision loss.
And one or more of the greatest episodes of Jewish history happened because of his eyesight problems.
Of course. And it's fascinating. And I'll give a moment of ophthalmic drash on this for a second. The beginning of the parsha, you have Yitzchak davening, right, on behalf of his wife,
right,
who can't have children, right? Later on in this same parsha, we know that Yitzchak is having trouble seeing, yet nobody is davening on his behalf.
Right.
It's a fascinating, fascinating sort of thing, because there's just sort of an acceptance of this. Oh my God, I've gotten old. I've lost my vision. But where is the tefillah that was so present just a short few psukim ago?
By the way, and apply that to today, where, and again, no criticism, call like a vote to everybody who prays for those who are suffering from diseases, who prays for women who can't have children, who pray, you know, for people to have shidduchim. But nowhere do you find on any Mishaberach list somebody praying for somebody who's losing their eyesight.
Right. So it becomes an individual, not as a global thing. And the point of the book, what was the goal, right? When you write a book, right, the question the publisher asks, you tell them, ask you, what's the point?
Right.
What's your goal?
Right.
My goal here was to educate our community. In what way, you may ask, right? Because when you go to Dr. Google and you look for support systems, right, you get a lot of information. When you start to look for support for family members, for Rabbanim who need to understand more about a condition in order to give a psak, there was no reference book, absolutely nothing available in a compendium in one place to provide support for families, support for individuals, to take on the difficult challenges of Emuna. How do you deal the why me when, God forbid, you're afflicted with a condition? Having all the halachic references without a psak, it was very important to us. My partner, Rabbi Fogel from Touro College, put together a massive, massive, massive list of sources from the Rishonim and down, so that when a psak needs to be given by a Rav for a person afflicted with shilas about how to navigate, it's all here in one place.
And by the way, we should mention, in addition to Rabbi Fogel, you have a whole team of great people who are either contributors or are cited in the book. And that's also, you know, talk about an all-star lineup. That's really important for this topic.
I thank you for sort of mentioning that. You know, my partners in this project were various physicians who are real world experts in their field. All of them are Jewish. Most of them are not observant, but all have been taking care of members of our community throughout their careers. Right. So they have a Yiddish heart, a Jewish heart, to understand the sensitivity. And I wanted this book to really be a reference book, not just to be my voice, but to be a voice of authority. And so I really put together specialists in their respective fields in ophthalmology. And what your listeners may not know is that, you know, you think an eye doctor is an eye doctor, but as you mentioned, the complexity really is so there that there are 8 different types of eye doctors. There are cornea specialists and retina specialists and glaucoma specialists and cataract specialists and neuro-ophthalmologists and pediatric ophthalmologists and low vision specialists. And we deal with also talking about shidduchim. And because of hereditary eye diseases, we know about Dor Yesharim, we know about J-screen, but there are also hereditary eye conditions that are not in those panels. And how do we navigate that? And what is serious and what is not serious? And survivors of eye cancers, yes, lo aleinu, there are cancers of the eye that can affect it. What do you do and how do you navigate your life? And so all these various topics are handled with sensitivity in this one book, and I want to be Makir Tov to Feldhain Publisher, my publisher in this. This book is available on Amazon through all Jewish bookstores. All proceeds from this book are going to American Friends of Yigdal Or. This is a tzedakah that doesn't stop. So you and I are big fans, I know, of Rav Grossman from Yigdal Or.
Yeah, and by the way, if someone in Israel approached Rav Grossman with an eyesight problem, he'd figure out a way to help them, frankly.
Absolutely.
I believe my mentor, the person responsible for my career, frankly, Howie Bramson, I believe he passed away from eye cancer, if I'm not mistaken. And
it is true. Howie was wonderful. He gave me my start. You may not remember, Nachum, that I also got my start at YUR.
Wow.
Thursday night with Harari at 12 to 12:30. And Howie was the one who let me get on the air for the first time.
Not to get too personal, but were you at all involved when he was suffering at that time?
I was not. I was not.
Because I saw what it did to somebody, and, you know, up close and personal, and wouldn't wish it upon anybody, obviously. And just the fact that it exists, eye cancer, I think is important for you to mention, because people don't realize how that terrible scourge can attack any part of the body. Dr. Norman Safra is with us. By the way, Dr. Safra, especially this time of year, Yontif begins Wednesday night. A lot of people will spend their Thursday thanking the one above for just giving them another complete year. Based on everything you said and all the specialties that your colleagues are in charge of, could you please join me in reminding everybody that if you wake up in the morning and you have full, clear eyesight, especially at an older age, you don't realize how blessed you are?
Amen. Listen, we say Pokach Ivrim every morning, and it should just sort of like resonate with all of us when we say all these brachot in the morning to the one above.
Unbelievable. Really. And the other thing, and again, I don't know if you appreciate or, you know, you find it tedious when someone like me who knows nothing about the eye. In fact, I cringe. I can't put contact lenses in my eye. just to give you, I'm sure you've met plenty of people like that, right? Who cringe if you even suggest it. I can't even open up my eyes underwater, which is very, you know, which is not a good thing if God forbid there's an emergency. But what I will say is that when you just spoke about all the specialties and all I started with the machine, the mechanism that God created. And for instance, when you started your career, was there at the ready cataract surgery that exists 30 years ago at that point?
So it did. You know, you and I, you know, you date both of us, right? So I finished my residency in 1992 and fellowship, my second fellowship in 93 and 94. The world of ophthalmology technologically is completely different. The surgeries that I perform today were dreams back in residency. It's a completely new evolution. The technology that has exploded with miniaturization, it is truly, truly mind-boggling. What I can do, short procedures under local anesthesia in an ambulatory fashion, required long hospital stays with immobilization. We have the ability today to really do magnificent, magnificent things to treat patients with all sorts of severe ocular blinding conditions that was not available to me 15 years ago, let alone 30 years
ago. And when even a cataract surgery, when it's described to me, I can't even fathom, you know, that there's, thank God, as you described, you know, so little, that there's not a great margin of error. I mean, thank God, you know, the 99% of the time everything goes well. Can you understand that? Can you understand why the average person would find it to be so difficult to understand how this miniaturization actually works and works well, while someone like you probably, you know, it's another day at the office, so to speak.
You know, it is, but we're really have to be committed within our field to being lifelong learners.
Right.
You know, that concept of continuing medical education, being a lifelong learner, is a, you know, it's a new concept in education, but it's so important in the field of medicine, and certainly much more so in the field of my ophthalmology, which is very technology dependent. If you and your listeners can imagine your camera, which takes a picture, and think of how, you know, the Androids and Apples of the world, right, every year improve upon the camera. That technology,
right,
is what we can adapt, right, to diagnosing, accessing, visualizing different parts of the eye.
My grandfather had a vart that I wish I could remember the first half of it, frankly. Mayor Weingarten of blessed memory and I would struggle for hours trying to figure out what Pusuk in Tehillim was referring to. But he had a vart that the eye is the only part of the body that when you rub it, it feels worse. And I thought, isn't that cool?
Great. Well said. That is very, very,
and he based it on a Pusuk in Tehillim, which has baffled all the Tehillim experts that I know, because no one can figure out which Pusuk it's talking about. But yes. The only part of the body that, and that's why Dr. Safra would recommend everybody don't rub your eye. Correct, Dr. Safra?
Absolutely true. And if your listeners find that plastic, share it with you, Malcolm, and share it with me.
Yes,
100%.
And also, those people who leave contact lenses around the sink, aren't you against them as well, Rabbi Safra? I mean, Dr. Safra.
Absolutely. Contact lenses are meant to be daily wear. And not to be stretched, let's talk about, you know, primary eye care and annual eye exams can't be overemphasized, especially for children. Developing minds need to be able to see well in school and function.
And, by the way, you know, and I think you write, yes. I think you write this, that based on your experience, if a kid's not doing well in school, get their eyes checked immediately. They may need glasses to see what we now call the whiteboard, used to be called the blackboard.
Absolutely true. And there are two very, very interesting things that you just mentioned. First is contrast, black on white and white on black. And technology, right? So your iPhone, and I think even the app, the ArtScroll app on the iPad may be able to flip contrast for people with low vision.
Interesting.
You know, and that's actually something that is, you know, that's also changed. The ability for Safari to be on the computer and flip your computer graphics, to have your iPad and your DAF on the iPad, or all of Tanakh on the iPad. Think about the technology that's available now in Judaica and how, again, we rely on it from a visual perspective.
By the way, do you make recommendations about people who look at the computer screen all day? I have a relative who wears like these blue goggles. Does it really help? Does it really matter? Or if nobody's bothered by what they're doing all day at the laptop, they should just continue and not worry about anything until a symptom arises.
Correct. So blue light glasses have not had any medical justification. There are people who feel comfortable with it, and if they do, God bless, it's not doing any harm.
Right.
That's for sure. But we were going to mention about children a moment ago.
Right.
You know, children with, you know, reading, again, we're unique because we read left to right and right to left. So children with vision issues or processing issues, being a practicing Orthodox Jew is certainly much more difficult than it is for my patients who are not Jewish, where they only have to learn left to right, as opposed to both right to left and left to right. And the same applies for people with neurologic conditions. And we have a whole section about this in the book. If you have certain neurologic conditions that prevent that right to left and left to right sort of problem, it compounds it as an Orthodox Jew.
And if you're the Jewish eye guy today, and don't be modest, let's just call you that for the purpose of this conversation, at the minimum, although many people in this audience would tell me that, in fact, you're the go-to guy. Who was it 30 years ago? Who was your mentor in this industry, if there was one? Somebody who was in the eye medical industry, but at the same time had a great concern for the people in our community.
So I will tell you, you know, there are two people that I really consider my mentors. One was a gentleman who Arthur Wolens, of blessed memory. Arthur Wolens was the former chairman at Downstate, you know, Kingsbrook, a really world-renowned neuro-ophthalmologist, one of the first people in the country at that time to have completed both a neurology residency and ophthalmology residency, who was a chazan as well in his shul, who loved the Jewish people truly with all of his heart and soul, and was a real mentor to me. The other, and I sort of mentioned it in the preface of the book, is Dr. David Abramson. David Abramson is the current director of ocular oncology at Memorial Sloan Kettering. He's been a mentor of mine for literally since the time I'm a medical student. He also graduated from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. He is not observant, but a man who is also has dedicated so much of his time to the Jewish people, and a really an amazing, amazing teacher and mentor.
Amazing.
And both of these people had a profound impact on my professional development.
Well, Rosh Hashanah is coming. Obviously, hearing takes, I guess, a front row, because the shofar's got to be heard on Thursday and Friday. But if you think about it, and if you read Dr. Safra's book, you'll see just how much seeing has to do with our tradition and just the ability to daven and the ability to represent someone as you read the Torah and a million other things, many of which you mentioned in the book, of course, are so vital to our service of God. And if you're able to wake up in the morning and, in fact, use your eyesight for the service of God, you've won the lottery, correct, Dr. Safra?
Amen. Amen. You are so correct, Malcolm.
The eyes of Isaac. Einei Yitzchak. The eyes of Isaac. Check it out. A Feldheim release available at the Feldheim website, available at Amazon. Ophthalmic Care Through the Prism of Judaism. Dr. Norman Safra with an amazing team and some great people who contribute to the book. Thank you so much, Dr. Safra. Good luck with the book and a Shana Tova to you.
A shout out to you and to all your listeners. Thank you so much, Nachum. Have a great day.
Dr. Norman Safra, very special work at America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners-sponsored digital radio, around the world, the web at NachumSingle.com and the Nachum Single Network, and of course, in the beloved NSN app.